Howdy, Mr. Sells.
Hello, Mr. Sells.
Right up front.
I want to see you make sure you do it well.
Great, great. We have somebody keeping us honest here who used to work on some of this stuff. Hi, I'm Chris Anderson.
Hi, I'm Josh Williams.
I'm a dev on, a dev manager now. They've taken away my keyboard and I can now only manage and I need to get pointy hair, so instead I shaved it all off. Today we're going to talk a little about building Windows 8 apps using HTML and JavaScript. Have you guys all heard about Windows 8?
No.
Great, okay. I woke up this morning and I saw apparently we announced it. It's very exciting. I like the fact that we had the announcement event on a Wednesday, and so every time they would say, I invite you to start using Windows 8 tomorrow. Like, I'm still trying to figure out the timing of that one. But I just want to talk a little about kind of the Windows 8 ecosystem and the different kinds of options of how you can build apps. And really there are three primary UI technologies you can use to build Windows 8 apps. The first being HTML and JavaScript, which we're going to talk about here. The second is XAML, which is kind of an evolution of the WPF Silverlight phone stack moving forward. And the last is DirectX and natively targeting the graphics stack. And kind of one of the big reasons why... It's very bright. I know everybody kind of sinks back a little bit. One of the big reasons why you want to target and use HTML and JavaScript is that it's what you know today. And the big thing that we have tried to do with the web stack here is to allow you to develop native Windows apps. That is, we want it to be familiar to you. We want it to use the techniques and technology that you're familiar with, but it is really about building Windows apps. You get to use whatever toolkits you already know and love. There's a session later in the week which talks about some of the idiosyncrasies as we, you know, the Windows environment for writing an app has some different security requirements than an arbitrary website. So there's a few little details there. But the big thing is you get to leverage this hardware-accelerated web stack for really building native apps. And you get full access to the Windows runtime from your JavaScript. And so we've kind of extended the sandbox of IE and given you access to the platform. So the first thing I want to do is to touch briefly on... let's find our magic button here. Great.
Here we go. Let's see if we see it.
We wanted to show kind of what we meant by the you can take anything and make it into a Windows app. And so, Josh, could you open up the default.html? This is one of our test drive sites. The IE test drive site is unmodified except for pulling it down from the site and making sure all the links work when we run it as an HTML file. So what I'd like to do is turn this into a Windows 8 app and show
how
hard this is. So please open, create a new project. This is Visual Studio 2011. You can use, there's a Win8 Express. You can actually, in the Windows Store, you can type developer and you can find tools in the Windows Store for building Windows apps that are free. We're going to start with a blank JavaScript app. Please delete everything except the manifest. Delete the top three files.
I'm going to go in here.
What are you doing now?
I'm deleting all the files like you asked me for.
Oh, great, great. I thought there was a delete key. I thought you were going to be a little more. That's great. Awesome. Perfect. Delete. Okay, our project is gone. And now please copy in the content from that old website.
There we go.
Copy, paste. It's very convenient because default.html happened to be the name that they chose to use on the website. So we have to make no other modifications. We'll include these in our project as quick as a snippet. And then F5.
Oh,
and we failed miserably.
What did we fail?
You forgot the CSS files.
It's because I didn't delete it from Visual Studio.
That's kind of why I was thinking you were going to use the VS delete key. But, you know.
Sorry about that.
He's new.
All right.
And so here's...
Maybe not to last.
Our website running unmodified as a WDB.
There you
great.
Go.
Switch back. Awesome. So there are some differences in the environment, though, and they're important differences to keep in mind as you build your app. So we saw that you could take an arbitrary website and bring it in, but there were actually some changes that happened under the covers. First off, there's some styling changes. The default style sheet associated with the web platform is different in the Windows web environment there. You also get a new host object, which is the Windows host object. There's some other changes to the DOM. For example, because of the security context, because you have native access to the Windows runtime, we do what's called a static HTML processing if you try to set the inner HTML property. So you may see references to exec unsafe local function, which is a way to work around this. Which brings us to this kind of this notion of local and web context, which when you go to go build a Windows app using HTML and JavaScript, you kind of have to understand the difference between the local context, which can read and which can talk to the Windows runtime, and the web context, which is in much more of the classic web sandbox. You're locked into the IE10 doc mode, and then there's a couple new protocols for accessing resources from your local package, which is the MSAppX, and the MSAppX web for doing web access. So with those differences, and with this idea that we wanted to build a platform for building Windows native apps using JavaScript, we decided that in addition to the toolkits that are already present on the web, jQuery and Dojo and the like, that we really felt the need to build a JavaScript library which could embody kind of the Windows personality and let you build Windows apps with the same sort of common controls you'd expect to find in any of the modern UI stacks. So we have some base utilities, some things like a style sheet that looks exactly like the Metro guidelines that codifies the exact right point sizes for H1s and for H3s, that has the dark theme and the light theme, so it's really super easy to get that look and feel. We have a set of utility libraries like the Promises library classes. We can do DOM queries, kind of all the classic base infrastructure pieces. We have some work to do with the app model. So in the web platform, you're used to using DOM content loaded as a way of signaling that your app's ready to run. In Windows, there's an app lifecycle that involves shutdown and suspension, the ability to listen to different kinds of activation messages, and we've routed those through an object to make that easier. We have some data pieces, ability to do binding and list, controls, animations, which really this is just a way of taking those Windows personality animations, giving you a very simple library for accessing them. And then, of course, the thing that people most readily identify with WinJS, which is the personality controls, list view, flip view, app bar. This is an eye chart, which you guys can all read later when you get the slides and try to diagnose it, but really it's just going through the major sets of pieces. And the thing I'd like to point out on this is that these are all intended to be independent toolkits. So one of the things we see a lot in the JavaScript community is this idea that we mix and match libraries together. We don't just use jQuery and nothing else. We'll tend to put in what we really like, mustache templates, but we want to use jQuery for DOM operations and then, I don't know, some crazy Promises library or something. When we built this, we tried to take that into account and say, you know, somebody may want to use that list view, but want to use mustache templates in the middle of it. And so we tried to build these libraries where they're fairly isolated and fairly independent toolkits. And so this grouping is kind of a logical grouping, which is a way we think about these pieces and how they can be used together. And so, like, binding is an independent thing that we think of as something that you can choose to use or not to use, and really want that to be a point of flexibility. The thing I want to spend most of today on is kind of a code walkthrough of the JavaScript library and kind of what we can do in WinJS. So Josh, if you would, let's switch back to code.
Let's do it.
Fabulous. My cheat sheet up here just in case I forget. I work on JavaScript, right?
And some other stuff.
Okay, great. So let's create an empty project, new project.
I think we can do that.
Fabulous.
All right, here we are.
So what I'll do is just empty out the content of default.js.
Great.
And as every good JavaScript programmer knows, you must have an anonymous function which encompasses all of your content, because any free-floating JavaScript would be considered impolite. Yes. And that's the last thing you want to do. The first thing I'd like to talk about is this core toolkit, this base set of libraries that we have, kind of the simplest sets of things. And the first one there is really the namespace. And namespace is a wrapper around the kind of module pattern that people are familiar with. So I'd like to do winjs.namespace.define, which is just going to create us a global a name. And so give this some name that you'd like it to be. Mm. We'll be typing this a lot in the talk. Shorter is better.
Great.
Great. Some awesome creativity flows from your fingertips.
It does.
Every time
I type.
The first function let's define is an ID function. Let's just alias the document.getElement by ID. So ID function, take an ID, and return document.getElement.ID. Great.
There you go.
So At first blush, just to kind of tell a little story about this function, is we didn't have this function initially. We thought it's so easy to go update a global name and to do it correctly, and to when the global name is present to OR in things and to append them. And it turns out there's enough little subtleties of when you should do it and how you should do it to avoid order dependencies, to do the namespace pattern right. We actually found that it turned into as we had more and more developers start writing this, we actually found this to be a pretty useful abstraction on top of it. And so we have our name. We can use it. Let's go in and get an ID.
All right, well, so, you need to go make an ID.
That's fine, yes. Let's create a div, give an ID. It's a very exciting thing, my div. Fabulous. And what we want to do then is the next piece in kind of the base toolkit is the app object.
Okay.
And so we talked before about how applications have a life cycle associated with them. And so one of the things you'll notice in all the VS templates is there's this line that says var app equals winjs.application. And that lets you get a hold of that app object, that thing that is going to be the manage your lifetime and give you a bunch of easy-to-use events. And so we'll say app.unactivated. We'll create a function. And so this is going to fire after your app's been activated, your DOM content's been loaded, your splash screen's been getting torn down. It's still up. When you complete this, your splash screen will go away. And so it's a fairly important event in your life cycle. So let's just grab that ID, or grab that element. So var my div equals sum dot. You gave it the name sum. That's your fault.
I did.
And set the text content of that, and then away we go. We have to do one last thing, which is call app.start. You have to finish typing.
Turns out.
Great. Excited. We have this app.start method so that you can get your object set up and you're guaranteed that none of those events are going to fire until you call start. And that way you don't run into race conditions where like you set stuff up and you yield to something because you need to do asynchronous work and you end up having the events fire in an unanticipated order. So let's run. Let's make sure it works. F5.
Yay!
That's very, very tiny text.
We should fix that.
Very tiny text. But let's go do that with, let's create a class fix that.
Great.
One of the things that we have is, in addition to the namespace, we have a class module. And this is the ability to define a constructor function. And again, constructor functions in JavaScript are fairly simple. But what we did is we created a wrapper around it, which gives us the ability to, you know, consistently apply the instance methods to the prototype, to imply static methods to the function itself, and to avoid kind of the common pitfalls of of allocating anonymous functions in a non-performant way. So what we'll do is we're going to define a class here. It's going to take a constructor function. It's going to take an element and options. And in here, please say element.style.fontsize equals 72 point. Great. And so we've defined a class.
We have defined a class.
It is polite in WinJS. There's a convention. When you create a class, which a constructor function, which takes an element and options, we like to think of that as a control, something that can be applied to elements. And it's polite to put a back pointer on that element to your control. We don't like to do lots of expandos, and so we've said the polite thing is to put one expando on. And so now we've created our class, we have it all done, and let's go use it. And so we'll say new my class over my div, and we have no options.
Great.
And let's run.
Hey.
Yes. This should be not exciting at all. Is everyone not excited yet?
I'm excited.
Okay, that is all very, very boring, mundane stuff, which is what you expect in the base library. Now let's do something slightly more interesting. I would like to make this into a declarative control.
Oh, uh-oh.
Which I have heard rumor that this is a good thing to do. So let's go add data-win-control to our div. So if you've seen any WinJS samples, you'll see this magic function, and you'll wonder, how does that work? And so we'll put sum dot my class, great. And now instead of constructing this, which is so old school to call a function, we'll call winjs.ui.processAll. And what this is going to do is it's going to take these declarative notations and just run the code we asked it to run. And so as you can see, the very simple pattern, a function that takes a couple of constructors, and when we run, I assure you it did rebuild, and so that is now declarative control notation.
Still works.
It does still work. Exciting. Now that's a little more exciting. We're getting closer to excitement. Fabulous.
All right, what do you want
to do? So we've seen the base library.
Yes.
We've seen the app object. So we're just kind of going through and doing a little tour through the base pieces of WinJS. So the next one of these toolkits is binding. The model view controller system, MVVM, all of these different things all end up being some form of data binding, some form of model separation. So let's go create a model and data bind this into our UI so we can see how this stuff all fits together. So we'll create a model. And what we'll do is winjs.binding.as, which is our way of taking a JavaScript object and creating a projection on top of it that is allows for change notification. One of the features missing from normal JavaScript objects is the ability to fire change notification. There's a ECMAScript 6 proposal for observability, which would get rid of this little helper, but for now we have to do this. And so we're going to go in and let's create a time field on there, and we'll give it a default value of new date. To local time string. Great. Wonderful. Exciting.
Thank you for the sense.
And then we'll just go set up the binding here. So we'll go to our constructor, and inside of here, let's go say, into our activated, and we'll say sum.model.bind. And this takes a name of a property you want to bind to, and then a function that you'd like to have called every time that property changes, including the initial setup. So we'll say value, and then inside of here we'll just say myDiv.textContent equals value.
Great.
Fabulous. We'll run.
We have a clock.
We have a clock. We have a clock that is right exactly once a day.
Except on, you know, daylight savings days, maybe.
Yeah, but we got daylight savings time is not for a couple of days. We're
okay,
fine.
Okay.
So let's go back and make this tick.
Okay.
So please go add a set interval. Ticks function. Inside of here, we'll just say sum.model.time equals, and we'll create a new date time, and it'll be a party.
All right.
This is what everyone came here to learn, how to make giant clocks. There's like three of them in the store already. Awesome! We have something we can sell now.
I'd pay money for it.
I. How much would you pay, though?
That depends on what kind of raise you can give me.
Great. Thanks. Great, so we've seen binding. We've seen the ability to update the data model. And what we, again, like before, I am tired of this JavaScript thing. Let's move on to some declarative notation.
You want to put your binding in HTML?
I want to put my binding in HTML.
Great.
Now, there's some people who will find this to be offensive, and for those of you who hate mixing your JavaScript and your HTML, I encourage you to shield your eyes. So what we're going to say here is text content colon model.time? No.
Time.
Great. And now we want to go and change this up, and so we're going to get rid of this imperative bind, and we'll replace this with winjs.binding.processAll. Binding takes the process all on binding, takes the right casing. Great.
Yes, sorry.
It is still a case-sensitive language.
Caps lock does not help.
It takes two arguments. The first argument is the root of the DOM tree. You'd like it to go start scouring for things to find, to go look at. And the second argument is the data model you'd like it to bind to. And so here we'll say sum.model. And now we'll run.
Hey, it still works.
And so we have a ticking clock. Fabulous. They're all stunned.
They seem stunned.
Silence. I think it's the rain. They're getting wet and melting. Wonderful. So we've seen binding. We've seen the models. We've seen the app object. We've seen the base library. The kind of last major piece of functionality in terms of this core set of libraries that we really saw that was a problem when we started building these SPA style, these kind of large applications written in HTML and JavaScript, is the ability to compose HTML together. So, you know, namespaces and classes are a way of composing JavaScript together in a way that has a structure that you can reason about it. And what we really needed was a way of doing that same sort of technique on the HTML itself. And so we have the concept we call pages, which is the ability to kind of demand load and then compose together HTML from different documents. And so, Josh, let's go add a page to this document, or
all
to
right.
this app.
So I'm just going to go to add new item here. I'll select a page. I'll leave it named page.
Great. Very exciting. Let's delete all that icky content.
Should I put something in here?
Yes, something in here. Something, anything you'd like.
Great.
It's very exciting. That is the simplest HTML page I can think of.
Mm-hmm.
And now we want to go, and we're just going to add this into our document because we're, you know, doing this exciting clock app. And so what we'll do is WinJS UI dot pages dot render, and this takes a URI of the page you'd like to load, which in this case is page on HTML, and then an element that you want to splat this content into. And what that's going to do is behind the scenes, it's going to go load up that HTML content, get a DOM for it, and then splat it into the page. And if we run, we should see this is my page get added. Hey!
There it is.
It's very, very tiny, but it works.
It is.
And then, right. We have a page. We've declared it. We've injected it in. The next thing we want to do is add code. We've seen the ability to go in and we started with this element. We went some programmatic code against it. And then we used the WinJS class define combined with the UI declarative processing to allow us to put code behind an individual element, the ability to customize elements and create controls that can be reused. What we want to do is a similar thing with this page, which is there may be logic we want to associate with the page. And so we're going to declare a page. So we'll say winjs.pages, ui.pages.define.
This is a lot like class.define, right?
It's a lot like class.define. In fact, we'll look at something that'll make it be very obvious. It's very like class.define. So page.html, and then we're going to give it a set of members.
So why do I have to give this URL?
So the URL, that's a really good question, Josh. That's an excellent question. Thank you.
You're welcome.
We give it the URL so that we can find the HTML content, so we can unify this definition of the HTML with the request to render it and get those two things bound together. So here we're going to define a set of members. So in the same way that class.define allows you to define members on your constructor function, this lets you define members on your page definition. And so here we're going to handle a well-known event called processed, which is called when the HTML has been rendered and has been declarative processing has been done against it. You heard me before say that we tried to make all these toolkits be fairly separable and that they're relatively isolated. The two cases that kind of violate this rule are pages, which bring together declarative processing with constructors and puts those together, and templates, data templates, which bring together binding and declarative processing. So in this case, let's just set the background of this to be red.
All right.
So element of style of background equals red, and that's the element that is represents the rendered page. So now we should be able to run. And we see the page takes up the whole screen.
I wonder why that happened.
We'll just pretend that only the little line got turned red.
All right, moving on.
Moving on. We're going to walk that one off. It's okay. We haven't shipped yet. Oh, darn it.
I actually know what that is.
We know what that is. Great. Awesome. So we've seen pages. We've seen declarative controls. We've seen binding. We've seen the suite of toolkits that we have here with really only one major exception. So this has been all kind of a little tour through the lesser-known parts of WinJS, the bowels of WinJS that allow you to build class libraries and controls and kind of the workhorses of binding. And really, when we come to building great Windows 8 apps, it's a lot about these three things in my mind, which is personality, plugging into the Windows personality, the silhouette of Windows, the list view, the app bars, the semantic zoom, these kind of, these core controls that define the Windows 8 experience, the contracts, the ability for apps to contribute to the system overall. Josh likes to say that, what's the quote?
Your system gets better the more apps you have.
Yeah. So I love that idea that as you add apps, search can find more content. As you add apps, there's more places to share to. As you add apps, the system gets better. The tiles get, you get a lot of live tiles, et cetera. And then finally, we all like to make money. We like to get paid. And so integrating with the store, having a way to monetize your application is another one of the core principles that, we think about when we talk about building great Windows 8 apps. And so let's go and add some personality to our app. Right now, it's a fairly scary, boring, big red clock app.
This is true.
And what we want to do now is we're going to start by going to that page and adding some more content to it.
Great.
So what we want to do is we're going to make this be a kind of more Windows 8 style app. We're going to use the data win control, which we learned about earlier, and add the list view to this.
There we
Great.
Go.
So All we right. have a list view, and let's go define a model. So before we had that simple time ticker model, and what we're going to do here is we're going to add users. And users are going to be a list of people. And I will not try to type everybody's name in the room or make Josh type it either, but we'll add some folks. Binding list. And what binding list is think of WinJS binding list as a observable collection if you're a .NET person, or as a JavaScript array with change notification. And really what it is it's that. It's an array with change notification. So Josh is going to add some items to this. And that's kind of close. Wow. There we go. Great. So we have our data.
Yes.
We have our list view. Let's go put those two things together.
All right. How am I going
to
do that?
Go to the control here, and let's go and do data win bind.
All right.
Data-win-bind. And we'll bind to the wincontrol.items data source.
Source.
Is it plural or single?
I think it's singular.
Great. We're going to find out.
The documentation would help us.
The documentation would help.
We're going to roll with it and see what happens.
Great. And then the last thing we need to do is wire up the data source. So let's go to our processed event over on the other side. Up, 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 up.
Where am I going? Here.
Right there, processed event. Your mouse cursor was there.
Oh, sorry.
And winjs.binding.processAll, which you learned about before. Element, comma, and then we need to pass it the data context, which case is going to be short.model.users. No, short.model. Great. And now?
So I'm going to have to go fix our previous bug, otherwise it's going to bite us. So the distinction was, previously, I just realized. Element that you get inside of your page is the
container
host element. It's the container element.
Yes.
And so we're getting the body. And so now if I do what I just did, we're going to bind the body twice.
Let's not do that.
We don't want to do. So let's say body.appendChild, and let's give it this guy. Great. So now we'll make a little free-floating container.
Some dot?
Yes, I type.
Come on, you guys are supposed to be our IntelliSense.
Phew.
You have a job. You're the audience. When you see errors and typos, you have to yell and make fun of us
you
for not being right. Okay, great.
Right.
So we have our list view.
It looks like a list view.
It looks like a list view. It selects like a list view. It looks like a really bad list view.
Those are some big check marks.
Those are some big check marks. So let's make it a little prettier.
All right.
Let's go add some styles.
Okay, styles.
We've heard of this CSS thing.
We can open it up even.
Let's open it up again. Let's add a style to our item. We need to add a template as well to make it look better.
I think we do need to add a template.
We both have cheat sheets and we missed that step.
That's true.
I'm confident we're going to go down one notch on the speaker review score.
Yes. All right, so let's add a template first.
Great. So let's go in, let's add a div. So templates are just another control. So you remember those controls are just functions. Those functions just take elements. So we're going to create as a binding.template. This is that other one case. We had pages which wired together a couple pieces. Template binds together a couple pieces of binding and declarative processing. And so we're going to add a div in here with a class. And I'm going to put another span or a name or something in here. Data when bind, your window of creativity.
Oh, thank you very much.
Text content to name. And we're probably good. Awesome.
Throw a little BR there. All right. So.
So we got a template, which has some content. That content is going to be data bound to each individual item. We're going to stamp it out multiple times. We're going to bind to each one of those using the declarative binding that we saw earlier. We're going to put a little CSS in here to make it look not ugly or less ugly.
So we'll give it, say,
give it a width and a height,
of
maybe
200 pixels and the height of 100 pixels.
Have a little padding or something in there.
Oh yeah, we'll do that too. Say background color of, what do you think? Dark gray.
Dark gray, love it. Dark gray. Dark gray is the theme. I think the shirts were all dark gray too.
I like it. And
the sky is dark gray. Everything's dark gray. It should be sky blue.
Great.
In Washington.
So I got a template.
Let's run.
I need to hook it up to my list view.
Oh yes, you do. It's the last thing. Great. So now we're going to use the options record. So you always saw this other argument. This other argument. Element, comma, options. The options so far has been empty in all these cases. Here what we want to do is we want to add in that template and wire it up to the list view itself. And so the data win options allows you to specify that second argument to the constructor function for list view. And so here we're going to say that we want to wire up the item template. We need to go find that DOM element, so we're going to do a select. You need to use single quotes, thank you. And that's just going to do a tree traversal and do a query selector all to find that other ID'd element. And away we go.
Yay!
There we go.
Ah, much better.
Sells claps because he worked on that feature. That is very self-serving of you,
yes.
Mr. Sells.
So why do I have to use that select thing?
You have to use that select thing because there's an interesting thing here. We said before that pages allow you to be rendered multiple times. And as you render multiple times, if we had used an ID and done ID lookup, you'd end up having multiple copies of that same element in the tree with the same ID, which it turns out the browsers get rather fussy on, and they start to do weird things like return you the first or last element, and it gets all confusing.
We wouldn't want that.
Great, so we have our static data. We've bound in our template. We've made it look great. It's a beautiful app. I am excited. This clock is looking better by the day. It's almost ready for sale. The last thing we need to do is be able to add more items to our list view.
All right.
So we want to wire up some code and show, you know, we talk about the personality of Windows. Can you change that from red background to something else? It's just the red is garish.
What would you like
Let's
to
just delete it. We can make it be black. It'll be black.
Great.
Oh, fuchsia. That's not better. That's more garish. You went the wrong way. You heard the guidance and just drove into the, It's like the 12-pound surface. That's not what people want. Can't work out in 6 minutes. It's 7-minute apps. Great. So we added a button.
Yes.
Let's go add an event handler for that guy.
All right. So we'll go up here to our model or our page control.
We'll go to our page control. We'll go find this guy. We'll do an element.query selector all, query selector of class add. And then we'll just do on click. Or you can, you can be all kinds of hip. You can do whichever one you'd like. Great. And then just in here, we'll add something to our model. So we'll say some model. Great. Users.push. So you notice this is where we're getting that observable collection, that binding list, the ability to go and push these things. Josh is going to create us a robot army.
I am going to create a robot army.
How old are they? Okay, they're the
they're
age of their
one
eye.
Older than their name. Whoops.
Great, and we have to have an eye somewhere in scope that will make us all happy. Let's see it.
All right, is it going to work?
Well, we'll find out. Yes. Woo. So you notice list view by default. The items came in, they animated, that personality of Windows started showing through. You got the scrolling, this item, the UI is actually virtualized in this case. There's a whole talk on how to make this thing look pretty and how to make the list view look good. That'll be happening later this week. Great. So we've seen data changes, we've seen that. Good.
Mm-hmm.
There's one other personality thing I'd like to talk about. So list view is probably the number one personality thing when people think of Windows 8. They think of that list view, that live tile view. The second thing that people often think about with varying degrees of happiness is the app bar mode notion, which is that idea that you can edgy in on your app and you get all of your commands coming in. And so let's go take our app and because we want to sell this in the store and we want to conform to all the guidelines, we want to get that commanding UI off of there and make it be an app bar. So let's go add an app bar to our page.
I think we're going to add it to the main page, right?
Main page, yes. We'll add it to the main page. We'll go add a div. We'll give it a... It doesn't need an ID, but that's fine.
Oh, okay.
And we'll data win control, make it an app bar. And this is just going to associate that the WinJS app bar class. Inside of here, we're going to put in some buttons that are themselves going to be data win controls that are app bar commands. So we'll go say data win control, app bar command. And what we'll do is, in the options record, we'll specify a few options here, one of which is the icon.
Okay. And there's a set of icons.
There's a set of stock icons included in the Metro, or in the, sorry, not Metro.
Dun, dun, dun.
Can someone call HR for it?
All right. In the Windows 8 App Store personality font known as Sago UI symbol. And it will be an icon of add.
In the awesome apps you build for Windows 8.
In the awesome apps you build for Windows 8, which can never be abbreviated anything shorter than Windows 8 apps for the Windows 8 App Store. And then we'll have a tooltip, a label. These are all good things. Give it any command you want. Excellent. And add a robot to your army. And we're good to go.
Oh, do we need a section?
Oh, we need a section. So... app bars generally have two kind of commands. There's an area for contextual commands that go on one side and global commands that go on the other. And so we want to put this in the global section. It'll show up over there and it'll automatically get sorted. And if we right-click, we see it comes up and we get our little add button. It's very exciting.
Work.
You missed a comma.
We missed a comma and it doesn't work. So not only did you not add code.
Did I miss a comma?
I see an extra comma. We have spare commas.
You're always chatting me about those extra commas.
Yes.
I think it has a tooltip. Let's see.
I think it has a tooltip.
Aha.
There you go. So it worked, even with the extra comma. So let's go convert over from using that button to using the app bar thing real quick.
Great.
So just copy the code out of the constructor. We're going to get rid of that app bar since it is evil. And then we'll go add an event handler to our function down here. We'll just go query for the, the ID'd add. Oh, very clever, very nice, very convenient you made the same thing. And then delete the app bar from the button from the page.
All right,
and then I think we now will have a fully conformant Metro or Windows 8 style app.
Oh, we did not. We did not. Oh, element. I didn't do it.
Document.body. Great.
Boom. And moment of truth. I can even do it with my finger.
Wonderful. Fabulous. So Windows 8 personality, we saw. We saw the ability to use the list view, how that plugged into binding, the declarative controls all playing into that, the fact that you can go and get the app bar in, add event handlers, and you can really make something that looks a lot like the Windows 8 experience. There's a ton of samples that show the different ways. There's like 70 some odd icons built into the app bar library.
Like 200.
200. Oh, sorry.
And there's an enum.
There's a giant enum that you can go find.
There's a giant enum somewhere.
Winjs.ui.appbaricon. There we go.
And there's a website you can find that has rendered all of these, so you can just go pick by what you see.
Yes.
Some of them are pretty cool, good looking, too.
Some of them are. Yes, thank you. That's much better.
Sorry. Someone call HR for
me. Clearly you meant to say all of them. Great. So you see the personality. Now, the next thing I'd like to do is really, I want to show how to plug into that contract system, that ability to make the system better by adding apps. And so we're going to take one of the easier contracts. We're going to go do the search contract. Search contract's easy. Super simple. Someone once told me it was hard. It's not true. So let's open a manifest.
All right.
And what we're going to do is the manifest designer. So we haven't talked about this yet. Every app in Windows 8 has a manifest associated with it, which declares the different things this app can do. You can say things like what kind of orientation it supports. You can specify what capabilities it needs. Does it need to be access the internet? Does it need to access your local file system? Does it need to access the document library? And then there's declarations, which are the thing that we want to talk about, which is what are the things that this thing wants to plug into? And there's a whole list of all these contracts you can plug into where you can add a lot of value to the system with your app. Everything from custom protocol handlers to share targets to search, which is what we're going to do.
Great. We're going to click Add.
In this case, we're just going to route to our existing page, so we don't need to do anything else with this. We're done.
Great.
We've now said that we're going to support search. We're good to go. We just need to listen to the event, and we're ready to run. So what we're going to do is we're going to grab a hold of the search pane. And the search pane is the object that lets you talk to the search contract at runtime.
Great.
So we're going to say is the app model dot search dot search pane dot my favorite method in the entire WinRT, git for current view.
Yes.
And if anyone can explain why it's called git for current view, that's awesome.
I saw Sheehan outside.
Sheehan's outside. We can blame him. Great. So we have our search pane. And what we want to do is listen to the query submitted event. So you can see this is really easy, shows up as another JavaScript object. We talked before about how when you're running in that local context, remember we said local context and web context, when you're running in the local context, there's a new host object available to you called Windows. And that represents the Windows runtime functionality. So this is a place you can go find lots of crazy stuff you can do with Windows. You can find the file system and the security system and storage and media and all sorts of crazy stuff. The other magic host object that you'll see in here is the MS app object. And this is the other place you'll see a bunch of extensions for the local and web context, which allows you to do the binding that are web specific for talking to things like blob URIs and stuff like that.
Yeah, the way to think about it is that the Windows object, you know, shows up basically on both sides of the XAML HTML divide. MS app just isn't HTML.
Yes.
All right, here we are in our query submitted method.
Great.
What am I going to do?
So we're going to create a new function called create results. And this will just take an argument of the query text that you'd like. Because everyone see, can you bring up the search contract real quick? Bring up search, just so you can see what this is like. So this little thing at the top, it says search. If you type into it, it lets you search. And then there's all these apps that can participate in the world down below. And so we want to build one of these apps that plugs into that. And so the user is going to type something, they're going to hit enter, and we want to handle that event. And so this is the user hit entered button on query submitted. There's other events that lets you plug into the rest of the contract to provide immediate feedback, all of that stuff. So what we want to do here is we're going to go grab our data context, our data object, our users, our model.
Okay, great.
So binding list has two very interesting things, one of which is it fires change notification. It looks like an array. And the other thing it lets you do is it lets you create live projections. So similar to how array has things like map and filter, in a binding list, you can actually create live filtered views over your data. So in this case, we're going to give it a predicate, which is item. And we're going to go not index.
It's item.name.
Item.name. Dot to lowercase or whatever you'd like. Do some comparison to the query text. Index of query text. Great.
All right, we'll just
you're making this thing all kinds of too. Jeez, this is going to be awesome.
It's just.
Return.
If they just had contains.
We could add it. We could go modify the string prototype right now if you'd like.
No, thank you.
Okay. Great. So we have our filtered results. Now let's go. The thing I'd like to do is, because I am deeply and truly lazy, is let's just go reuse our page. Before we said we can multi-instance pages.
Yes.
And so let's just use our page again to show the search results. So let's create another child, which we did before. WinJS.pages.render of the same URI. .html. You probably want to have the HTML. It will not figure that out. And we'll give it a data model in the options record, which is our filtered thing. Now, you may recall, we did not have that before. The second argument to render is the child.
Oh, thank you, sir.
And then we also want to put that in the document so that we can see it.
Yes.
And so now we need to go and do a little bit of code refactoring here.
All right.
Of going to our pages processed. And we want to change this to take, instead of some model, just take options. We'll make options be our model. And then go change our calls to render, the one other one, to pass in the model that we'd like on binding, or pages render, right there, pass in sum.model, and now we should be able to run. I think that's it. I think we'll have a searchable app.
We'll see.
Okay, so let's add some robots. Sweet. Bring out the search charm. And let's look for all of our Chris's, or robots, either one.
Hey! Oh, you know what we have to do? If I have more results, I'm not going to be able to see them.
Oh, great. Let's make it a little scrollable thing.
Let's make it scrollable.
Scrollable. Oh, an inline style?
It's just for the demo.
Dude, we're going to be publishing this app on the web, or on the store, on the... okay, that's fine.
They're not going to take me out for
scroll.
This, are they?
No, they. I think they will.
Okay.
Great, run! Let's look for our robots this time. Robots, great! Now let's add some more robots. Notice they show up in both lists.
That's kind of sexy.
And that's because it's that live projection, that create filtered view, which lets it run in both locations. And so as we go, we can see our new search results. And this app is fabulous. Best clock app ever. 5 stars.
/robot army creator.
Great. How are we for time? I think we should. Yeah.
We got a couple minutes.
We can keep going.
All right.
We can keep going. They're not going to kick us out yet. So should we get paid now?
I think we should get paid.
Let's get paid. We're ready to monetize this sucker. We're ready to sell it and charge money. Now, the store is great. The store has all these options where you can configure in-app purchases, and you can configure trial modes and expiring trials and all sorts of crazy things. And the great thing is that you can code all of this stuff up in your development environment and simulate all of it. And so you can play around with it, you can see how it works, and you can configure it without having to actually publish to the store, without having to create your own virtual store on your back end. It's awesome. And so what we want to do is we're going to go talk to one of those things. Now, the easiest one of these to do, and conveniently the one that I, like as a human, I like the best, which is trial modes. Trial modes I love because developers love to download them, and it turns out it's just insanely simple to go build stuff that use trial mode. So Josh just created this div, which is our giant pay me button, and so this is going to be our ad. This is going to be our incentive, quote unquote incentive, to get people to pay us. And so what we'll do is, he's adding this horribly red thing, and now we want to make it that, there you go. Is the blink tag still work?
I was just wondering that.
It does.
It does. I heard it does. Can you make that be blink?
No!
Oh, it doesn't blink.
You're telling me I can't do IE7 doc mode, really?
Oh, yeah, you cannot. You're stuck in IE10 doc mode.
Damn it. All right, moving on.
Great. So we've got our big button. We've got our advertisement. Now let's go write the code to go and query to see if we're in trial mode.
Okay. So here we are in our activated handler.
In our activated event handler, what we're going to do is we're going to go grab. So the way that the simulator works is there's two objects that are published into WinRT for the store. One is called current app, and one is called current app simulator. The simulator is the one that you do not want to ship to the store. You will get rejected and send nasty emails. The current app is the one that actually works when you're at runtime. So what Josh can do, he's going to use the simulator. And what we can do is we now ask it all sorts of questions. So the first question we want to ask it is, hey, when the license changes, tell me. So we're going to say current app dot license information dot great on license changed. And so this will say, hey, every time you change, you don't want to put that in a function because we're going to have to call it.
Oh, you're right.
When you change, please tell me. So we're going to create a little function here. We're going to call it license changed or license updated or something. Great. And then we'll go associate that here. And then what we're going to do in here is we're going to ask some questions of the license. So we're going to say if current app.licenseInformation.isActive, which says, hey, do you know about this thing? Does this guy have a valid license at all? Is he a good person? Has there been no errors? And we're going to say if it's not trial mode. If it's not trial mode, so if we've got a valid license and it's not trial mode, then what we're going to do is we're just going to turn off all of our nagware. So we're going to say winjs.util.query. We're going to go grab everything that says trial only, and we're just going to add the class hidden to it. So we're just going to say go hide all that stuff because we did a really, really simple nagware kind of trial mode. Great. So let's define hidden as display none. And let's run. Great!
I still need to be paid, Chris.
Well, you click pay. It's not
a button.
Oh, okay. We gotta add a button. We gotta make it that you can pay me.
All right.
We said pay me, and now let's make it pay me. Now, of course, we know everything should go in the app bar. So let's go add something to our app bar.
Great.
And let's clone a button or create a new button or however you'd like to do it. And let's create one that is called pay me. Icon should be shop. Of course there's one. Give it a label. Pay for my robot army.
Great.
Robots don't work for cheap.
They do not.
And great. And then I think we just need to add an event handler there, right?
I think so.
So let's add an event handler for pay me. And what we'll do here is we'll again go to that current app simulator, and we'll say, hey, request app purchase. And this takes one argument, which is whether or not you want a receipt. And in this case, we don't want a receipt because we're not going to tell the user. And we're going to run. Awesome. Now let's pay. And now, this is why you shouldn't ship this in the store. Notice, the user gets to choose if you bought it or not. This is an awesome UI.
What are my other choices?
Click the other choices. You can e-fail. You can out of memory it.
There may be some people in the audience old enough to recognize the things in this list. Thank you, Chris.
Great. And we'll SOK it in this case. Our event handler ran. We've been paid. Woohoo! Sweet.
I love it. There we go.
All right. Oh, we are so on time. So we did a whirlwind tour through WinJS, through the web environment, through how to build HTML and JavaScript libraries. And really, the intent here was to kind of give you a tour through the bits and to say, what are all the interesting places? There's a ton of sessions. Like, if you go back and look at even last year's build session, there were a dozen sessions on WinJS and the web environment for building this stuff. And so there's a bunch of material, and really my hope was to kind of whet your appetite with the set of things that are interesting, the set of things that you think are important to your app, whether it's the libraries or the way of manufacturing your code, the way of separating out the JavaScript files, the HTML files, getting paid, if that's the important thing. There's a bunch of sessions coming up this week. Josh is doing a deep dive into WinJS where he will go into the world's craziest promise code. If you want to see bizarre and evil things you can do with asynchronicity. We're going to talk about the list view later. On 11.1, there's a horrible set of really awesome talks that are all happening at the same time about modern JavaScript, talking about the ES5 stuff, the store analytics, and this how to build world-ready, kind of do the globe-loke stuff. Turns out that when we launched Windows 8, we launched it globally in a lot of markets, and so you may want to get money from all of those people. And then, of course, there's one talk which I couldn't even put on there, which is Andrew's doing the TypeScript talk at the same time. So
that's the talk I want to go.
That 4:15 slot is going to be really tough to choose. Great.
All right. Well, I think we have about, like 10 minutes for Q&A?
We have about 10 minutes for Q&A, so if anybody has any questions.
Oh.
I see a question.
Yeah, I had sort of asked in an earlier session about this, the ability to reuse code between something that you developed specifically for the web and something that you developed here. I mean, this is a very impressive display of using very specific Microsoft technology to generate this interface. How can I, or do you have a recommended pattern to follow to take, to reuse as much of the markup and JavaScript as possible?
Great. Let me see if I can restate the question. I won't restate it that way. very politely worded was, boy, it looks like it's going to be hard for me to reuse my code between a website and a Windows app because you have all this crazy Microsoft proprietary libraries that seem to tie me into the platform, and I really want my code to be usable everywhere. Is that accurate?
Yeah, although I get, yeah, it is, but I
great. So the markup. So the interesting. There's two interesting things about the markup part. So on the on one hand, it is just standard JavaScript and standard CSS. So there's a lot of options about how you can manage that. HTML. We were very careful to try to use the data attributes and conform to the HTML5 standards. The way we do the control wire up is very simple to implement on top of jQuery, on top of any of those things. My mental model for how to do that is I think that there's one thing, which is the Windows 8 look and feel in your Windows 8 app and how you make that work and how you share a bunch of your JavaScript logic and how you can factor your app into kind of a model view controller type system or an MVVM or whatever one you like so you can reuse the most amount of your code. Which I think those are kind of the main techniques there. And then the question becomes is, well, what if I want to build a Windows 8 style website? I want my website to look like a Windows 8 app. And that's something which is, at the moment, I don't have a great answer for. I think that's something where we definitely want to hear more feedback on how often people want to have their website look like a Windows 8 app in terms of what we should be doing in that space, and honestly, how you think we should do it. I we don't have a great answer right now. So I'm sorry, but that's kind of where we are. I think it's the, in general, factor your code, reuse your JavaScript libraries where possible, and that's the answer.
Yeah, I mean, to be clear, though, I think there's a session later this week on jQuery in this environment, and it works really well. There are some gotchas that you have to work around, but in general, it works great. And most of the major libraries can be made to work in this environment with minimal pain. And I think it really does come back to some of the stuff Chris is talking about where, you know, we showed you in the beginning, dropping a website in and running it in this environment can be done, and you have to start answering questions about how do I want to change my look and feel, if at all, for the Metro environment. And then things like, okay, great, I have to sign up for suspension so that I can come back from activation correctly and things like that. And there may be some shim you have to write to make that happen.
So that's actually a very good answer, which is that I haven't missed something obvious here.
No.
We'll have to figure it out.
Yeah.
Yes.
And there's yeah. Great. Next question.
There's a session on jQuery on Friday.
Friday's the jQuery session. Great.
8:30.
Yeah. A.M.?
A.M.
Wow.
Woo! It's a developer conference.
Watch the
and
video.
That's after the attendee party. Isn't the attendee party Thursday?
Sweet. Awesome. Come to the session.
It'll be great. Question up here.
So you guys mentioned that you know, ECMAScript standards are going to be evolving. You're going to be evolving WinJS when that solidifies. What do you think the upgrade path is going to be, and would it be backwards compatible once you do version?
So with the evolving, let me see if I can restate the question. With the evolving standards around ECMAScript, with WinJS itself versioning going forward, what's the upgrade path and what's the backcompat story? For the library or for your app? So let me first talk about the versioning story around the WinJS AppX package that we have. So WinJS itself is a store delivered Windows component. And so it comes down with the store. As it gets updated, as we service it, it stream as apps depend on a new version will get downloaded to the user's machine. And so the promise we've made there is the same promise we've made with all Windows components, which is we, you know, effectively guarantee compatibility. We do app compat testing. We're in a very interesting situation where we have the WinJS team is a rather small team, and we've been doing our own servicing. So we've already done several, you know, little minor servicing events up until now. We've gone through the whole process of delivering multiple versions to the store. And so you've actually already been updated three times through the store for a new version of WinJS. Our goal there is always compatibility. So we do app compat testing, we do all of that stuff. And so that's kind of the servicing story. So microsoft.winjs.1.0.appx, which is the name of the actual library that is in the store, will now and for always be compatible with 1.0. As we move it forward, it will always be compatible. That thing will stay the same. It will have the same set of functionality. There will be, at some future point, if we ever do another release of Windows...
Heaven forbid.
Which I know is an unlikely idea. But if we ever did a new version of Windows and we added new code to WinJS, we would have a new name for WinJS that would be the new name for the set of things. And so by that, we get side by side. So you can think of it more as the DirectX model or the same as jQuery, where they do new numbers and new versions. And some people link against I always want whatever is the current version, but that's pretty rare in websites. And so that's kind of our story, is that as we move forward, there'll be a version... side-by-side version that will remain compatible.
Yeah. And generally speaking, we don't think we'll be dramatically impacted by, you know...
Oh, the ECMAScript stuff is...
The ECMAScript and things like that.
Yeah, the ECMAScript
is we're just a standards-compliant JavaScript library, and so...
Yeah.
You know, JavaScript has to worry about evolving itself and maintaining backward compatibility with all the libraries.
We don't have to be compatible with JavaScript. JavaScript has to be compatible with us. No, I'm kidding. That's just kidding. It's kidding. Sorry. That'll be the quote. That'll be what shows up somewhere. Look at, yeah.
Better you than me.
Do we support IE6? No, IE10 doc mode. Didn't you see that? We force IE10 doc mode. It's great. Any other questions? Oh, all the way in the back? And then I'll get you over here. What's the performance impact of HTML and JavaScript and C# and XAML? Well, they both have performance. The relative performance, the absolute performance, there's all kinds of crazy questions we could talk about there. I will say in our experience, HTML and JavaScript versus C# and XAML versus C++ and XAML versus native DX apps. Let's talk about those four general classifications of apps. In general, the app design impacts the performance far greater than the choice of UI library or implementation language. We have these charts as we've been trying to tackle performance. You know, running on the ARM devices, running on these lower power devices has been incredibly challenging across the board. It's a really, really challenging thing to get Windows to run super fast, to get these libraries, to get Triton to run fast, to get XAML to run fast. I mean, it has definitely been it's a challenging thing to do. And that, unfortunately, falls to the app as well. It is incredibly, incredibly easy to write a slow-performing app. And so we see slow-performing XAML and C# apps, and we see slow-performing HTML and JavaScript apps, and we see fast ones as well. And so I would say that at the moment, in the Windows 8 bits that you get today and that are available, the biggest trade-off is you writing a good app at the moment. There is a set of things. So, for example, the way we did virtualization in WinJS can tend to have slightly slower panning performance than XAML, but XAML has slightly worse, you know, group virtualization characteristics when dealing with lists. And so there's these weird trade-offs where there's the edges, but it's nowhere that I would ever say it's something that you should design your app around. The biggest point of deciding which technology you want to use is really about what your expertise is and what you are going to be most proficient at. Because in the end, the equation for developers, I think, is all about ROI. You're going to make some amount of investment in writing this application, and you want some return. And whether that's a business return for an internal app or whether that's actual money coming to you from the store, you want to get it out as quick as possible for as cheap as possible with the best quality experience. And that's going to, in the end, depend on your skill as a developer. And so picking the one that's right for you is the right thing. I just honestly, we see it go back and forth as to which is faster, which is slower, and it just matters in the usage. So that may not be a satisfactory answer, but I'm sorry. There's a question over here, and then I'll get over here next. Yeah.
Why did Microsoft choose to write event model binding instead of just using their own framework, instead of using just Knockout.js?
Why did Microsoft decide to invent new library instead of insert your favorite library here, Knockout.js or jQuery or something like that? And specifically about event model binding. It's an interesting question. I think that one of the things for us has been building something that really embodies the Windows 8 personality and the problem space that we needed to do. And that drove us pretty heavily to build something like the list view and to build some of those higher level controls. And for some of the lower level libraries, so for example, Knockout for binding, there was a bunch of debate about whether or not we take those individual libraries that are kind of the bottom and then piece those together from different parts of the web. And in the end, one of the things that we found was that we really felt that some of those we needed to optimize for the exact scenarios that we were doing. So for example, our data layer, we needed to optimize for large virtualized data sets with grouping constructs. And those aren't always what the libraries are optimized for out there. And so it's not that we didn't like them. It's that we thought that building something together would produce a more cohesive whole that plugged together pretty seamlessly. But honestly, like, we see a bunch of people who use Knockout with ListView. We want that to be a very valid thing. And we think we don't have to go build Knockout. Like, it's out there. You should go use it. You like Knockout? Go use it. Peace be with you. It's awesome. Use it. Plug it into ListView. Fabulous. Don't use our binding system. That's okay. I would say, unlike, you know, .NET has kind of a very cohesive whole where there's bindings from, you know, the intrinsic XAML controls into the binding system, and that's not how we designed WinJS. We designed it as very separable toolkits. So if you want to use Knockout, go use it. It's awesome. Please do. There's a question over here. No. WinJS is JavaScript. If you go F12 into the code, it is JavaScript. You can go look at the source code. You can debug into it. It's JavaScript. It's standard JavaScript. There may be a few places. I mean, it's we test it and run it inside of the web compartment in the HTML. Script. You're not showing anything.
I'm showing myself.
Well, you love what you see.
Sometimes.
So this is the code for
Pages.
Pages. Yeah, great. So it's just a bunch of JavaScript. The big doc comments are actually how we drive IntelliSense. We've tried, for the most part, to write intelligible JavaScript that we hope people can read. There are some cases where we have incredibly complex things. The ListView code, if you can wrap your head around it and write a big document about how all that stuff works together, that'd be awesome. Send it to me. I'm Chris Ann at Microsoft.
Yes.
It'd be awesome.
Do you want to work for me?
It's big. We have, so it's definitely not compiled down. Now, what we do have is, in Chakra, there is some very good optimizations for bytecode caching and parsing and things like that to make startup in Windows Web Apps be very, very quick. But that's all just browser optimization stuff that we do in IE.
So is the rendering engine then IE?
Yes, rendering engine is Triton. It's HTML. MS HTML, it's the web platform.
Well, it's interesting. You browse right over that, but I think that's actually one of the interesting things to talk about performance that we were able to take advantage of in this context.
Absolutely.
Inside Windows, is we actually do, because all of the content that's meant to be loaded in your app comes down in an app package from the store, we are able to actually bytecode cache the JavaScript. So we actually do pre-parse it, and we store that representation on the disk. And then when it comes time to actually load some JavaScript, we don't have to run any parsing. We just kind of get a pointer into a byte stream of the trees. And so that's one of those things that you can't do on the web because you may not have ever seen anything before. But in the case of an app, we're able to take advantage of that to make an experience even better.
Great. There's a question over here.
Are there plans to allow this to work on the Windows Phone?
Are there plans to allow this to work on the Windows Phone? Next question. I can't speak to what the Windows Phone team's plans are. I can't speak to what the Windows Phone plans are. Windows Phone 8 has IE10. This is HTML and JavaScript. I don't know how those guys work together, so we'll see. I've never seen a browser. Anyway, what Mr. Sells.
Josh, if you scroll up a little.
If I scroll up.
You have the mydiv equals sum.ad mydiv.
Yeah.
I'm curious why you wrote that code, since it works just fine without it.
Oh, why did I write this code instead of relying on IE's
auto ID propagation?
Right.
Well,
you don't even need that, right?
No. You say, yeah, you're right.
Yes, 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 yes. So I know Chris.
We all know Chris. Everyone in the audience may not know Chris, but you know, Chris has he's never presented before. So I just want to give him a little tip, which is sometimes you pick an artificially simple scenario to demonstrate a point, so we can show the namespace stuff without having to do it.
Yeah, but you don't need that line of code.
No, I know we don't need that.
Oh,
I understand that.
I see what you're saying. It's a oh.
It was a pedagogical tool.
Know, someday I'm going to start.
Yeah,
classes.
You should write a book.
I should.
Yeah, I would help.
His book's available for pre-order on Amazon.
Yeah, it is actually. Sorry, as we divert the last. Anyway,
but to actually answer your question, you can very easily alias those names in JavaScript, and JavaScript wins.
Yeah.
Well, I get that.
And so this is more predictable.
Yeah. Great. One more question here. Yeah, I noticed that. I don't know.
I know.
Oh, you do? Great.
I was running it under the debugger.
Oh, great. So
it turns out
run it under the, outside the debugger. It's, right. It's in your...
It turns out Chakra...
No, just it's in your app. Go to your start menu. You did this presentation without power?
Wow.
I don't know. Is it this one?
No,
it's not that one. I didn't... Oh, did I name it?
No. Okay, go back. F5 in the tool. You can find it better.
Website.
There you go. Turns out the debugger slows things down.
Yes, I believe.
Sorry about that. Chakra, there was no trick up my sleeve.
Chakra and the debugger does no jitting for its JavaScript.
Great. I think we have time for exactly one more question, as long as it's less than 6 seconds long. Next question, anyone?
Here.
All the way back. Are toolkits like Dojo just supposed to work fine in the app mode? I would recommend you go to the jQuery talk on Friday at 8:30 a.m. Because Dojo may or may not work. I haven't tried that one myself. There are specific limitations and some in the environment, in the web environment, which cause certain toolkits to fail, most likely because of the way that they do inner HTML processing, because we do that safe HTML, that static HTML validation, and so that's the one that we've found to be the most tricky, and so we've been working with a bunch of the, either we have guidance on how to make apps work in that environment, or also talking to the toolkit vendors about how to make their apps work in that environment, just for the, it's just a few little security quirks that we have to work around, but in general, yes, absolutely they work out of the box. Great. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Enjoy the rest of the conference. Oh, don't forget to fill out the session eval, please. Thank you.